Hi, it's Melissa Moore, and welcome to Mile High Magazine. Happy to have you with us on this Sunday morning. And an important message and important information to get out about domestic violence. And I've got Jody Strauss, the executive director of SHARE, Domestic Violence Agency, that serves Morgan, Washington, and Yuma counties in Northeast Colorado. Good morning, Jody.
Good morning, Melissa.
Well, first, let's kind of start with some of the basics, because I think there's always confusion about domestic violence and what actually it is. Can you explain that?
So domestic violence or intimate partner violence is definitely not just about physical abuse. There are many ways to have coercive control over your intimate partner, and that could be emotional, spiritual. Physical does come into play. But there's many ways to control your partner and, threat, coercion, different types.
I was going to say, why don't you give me some examples? Because I think all of us think of domestic violence, or at least the old definition, people would think of the physical violence. But when you talk about emotional or spiritual, what does that look like?
So emotionally abusive is if you are, beating your partner down emotionally every day, calling them awful names, telling them that they're worthless. Spiritually, you can take away their right to believe in a higher power. A lot of domestic violence centers around isolation.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll be isolated from your family and your friends and those people that help you with your perspective on what's happening. It's important that people understand the term gaslighting or crazy making. That comes into play a lot in our job, because people may turn the story around. If you caught your partner lying to you, they may turn it around on you.
Mm.
And you start believing them, because
right,
that's all you're hearing is their voice.
Right.
Financially, it's very hard for people to get out. And frankly, survivors are in love with their abusers. Abusers don't come with a warning sign.
Right.
They don't start out abusive. If you went on a first date and got slapped, you probably would not go on a second date. But that is not the way abusers work. They're very charming for 3 months to a year, probably. And then all of a sudden, they become who they really are. And by then, you're in love, and you might have a child, and it's hard to get out of those relationships.
I have to tell you, Jody, I've never heard a time frame put on it. And you said 3 months to a year. So basically, they can be the good person. They can hold it together. And then the true colors come out.
Well, and that's not an exact time frame, but it's what I talk to my survivors about. I ask them to take relationships slowly. One of the red flags that we look at in our job is if a relationship is moving too fast. It's because the abuser needs you where they want you before they show their true colors. And it normally moves at a rapid pace.
So the term love bombing, when you hear somebody say, I was love bombed, and then it went bad, is that kind of a precursor that we're talking about here?
Well, please understand, you can be love bombed by a really good person, too. And maybe they do that for the rest of your life. So we totally believe in healthy relationships. But love bombing definitely happens at the beginning of an abusive relationship. Unfortunately, that disappears when the abuse begins. Now, the most dangerous time in an abusive relationship is when you're talking about getting out or when you've recently left. And love bombing may happen at that point, too. There is a cycle of violence. And if an abuser is afraid he's going to lose his partner, they will make all sorts of promises, apologies to get that person back. And then it goes right back to the status quo.
I was going to say, so somebody who maybe has a family with their partner and they're trying to keep the family together and the partner's promising all these changes and they go back, does it become more dangerous then?
At that point, it's not more dangerous. It's always dangerous when you're talking about leaving, because then you're talking about an abuser losing control of the person he wants control of or she wants control of.
Mm-hmm.
And I say he or she because we work with all survivors of intimate partner violence. And it doesn't discriminate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've heard that too. So somebody realizes, wow, I am in an abusive relationship, whether it be emotional or physical or spiritual. What do they do? What is that next step for them?
Well, I hope that they would reach out to an advocacy agency. And that's more to have a conversation with somebody that's outside your circle, that's not going to judge you. We all understand the dynamic. And just to have that conversation and find out what your options are to get out safely. We safety plan with our survivors all the time. We offer many different supports, emotional support. Sometimes it's nice for survivors to have somebody to talk to that's not a friend or family member. While friends and family members are wonderful, the first thing that they're going to say is get out.
Right.
As advocates, we never tell a survivor what to do because we could put them in harm's way by doing that.
Okay.
But we do give them their options for safety and we'll help them do that.
So you are talking about a safety plan. Explain that to me.
Safety planning, we have a written safety plan, but safety planning is basically how to get out of that situation safely. When does that abuser go to work? When could you get the documents that you need together to get out safely? How can we get you to the bus station or on a flight somewhere to get you somewhere safe? And having a plan at the other end of that safety or getting you into a shelter. We work very closely with shelters in Northern Colorado. We have crisis shelters and 24-hour crisis lines. And it's important. We understand that abuse doesn't happen 8 to 5 Monday through Friday.
Mm-hmm. That is very true. So you help them come up with that versus just saying, hey, you need to get out. And explain again why you don't tell a survivor just to get out.
Because if I did, and that survivor went home and packed their bags and started leaving and got seriously injured or killed on the way out the door, I have done a disservice to that person.
So that's why you talk to them about a survival plan and getting, and I don't want to say getting out safely, but a safety plan, basically.
It is all about getting out safely and with your children if possible.
Right.
We just never tell a survivor what to do. Our services work on where the survivor's at and what their needs are. There is no cookie cutter survivor in our agency.
Right. Right. What are some of the things maybe that people get wrong when it comes to leaving a situation like that?
Do you mean survivors or their friends and family members that don't understand?
Probably their friends and family members that don't understand. What do friends and family members that don't understand get wrong when they're trying to help survivors?
I wouldn't necessarily call it getting it wrong because I know that those people care much about their family and friends. But what I suggest for family and friends that have someone that they know that's in an abusive situation is listen. Don't tell them what to do. They have to make their own choices. Because when we tell them what to do, our expectation is that they'll do that. When they don't do that, then friends and family members get discouraged and become frustrated. And that's how isolation begins.
Mm-hmm.
So listen to what their situation is. And I highly suggest that you have them reach out to an advocacy agency. So they have somebody to talk to. They can see what their options are.
Mm-hmm.
See if they can get out safely if that's what they choose to do.
So at SHARE, and I know you serve Morgan, Washington, Yuma counties there in Northeast Colorado, what is your role in all of this? How do you help?
So at SHARE, we offer many different services, a lot of emotional support. We have a weekly support group. At that same time, we have a children's group, so people don't have to find daycare to attend our group. Children love children's group. They go and they have fun. We don't talk about domestic violence with children, but what we do talk about is respect for others and not bullying, things like that. In our support group, we do talk about red flags. We help with education. We let people vent if that's what needs to happen. And so it is a wonderful resource, knowing that you're not alone and that you have people that understand your situation and they have your back is so important when you're going through something like this. We offer financial supports for someone that might need their locks changed, or, you know, the primary breadwinner is now in jail for domestic violence, and you need food in your household for you and your children. We can help with that. We just offer all sorts of supports. Another important thing our agency does is help with pro se documents. That is helping people get restraining orders, divorce, and custody paperwork done without a lawyer. Many of our survivors can't afford a lawyer, and we assist them with that paperwork. I have an outreach director here that's been here for 19 years, and she's quite the pro se document helper.
Yeah, that's got to be huge, because that has to be not only expensive, but also completely overwhelming to have to do that part of surviving as well.
Absolutely. And the court process is scary. So we also offer court advocacy. So while they're going through the court process or any of those things, they might ask us to go to court with them to support them. That does not mean that we testify. We go for their support. There are strict confidentiality laws in domestic violence agencies, and we generally do not testify in court unless we're testifying as an expert witness in a case that we don't know about.
Right. Tell me a success story that you've had at SHARE.
Oh, so we've had a lot of success stories, and I guess in general terms, what I like to talk about is I love watching support group members come in for the first time, and one of our support group members offered the idea that they take a selfie on the first night that they come to support group, and then 2 or 3 months down the road, take another selfie, because we see them once a week, if not more, and we see the light come back in their eyes. I mean, pretty soon, they've gone to down and depressed and a flat affect to they're getting their life back and they're getting that sparkle back in their eye. And that's the one thing I love to watch in my job, is watching survivors get their hope and their empowerment back.
Yeah, I bet that really is powerful. And what kind of therapy, what kind of help does it take after they leave so that they can start that healing process for them, and if they have children, for their children as well?
Absolutely. That's so important. And you have to be ready for that. We do discuss that with survivors, and we make referrals to appropriate therapists depending on their needs and their children's needs. We do not offer therapy in our office, but our support group is a big help to have a place to discuss some of those really chaotic situations. But definitely we like to refer to therapists so they can work through some of that trauma.
And I would have to imagine that there is a lot of trauma that lingers for a while, even after they leave.
There is trauma, and there is triggers and you know, things that come up that are unexpected. Even years after someone has left an abusive situation, they can still be triggered by that person if they're sharing children, or they can be triggered in new relationships, depending on what they may see.
Right. So for folks, the first thing that they need to do, should they find out or should they realize listening to you that, wow, I've got something going on, I need to address it. You talked to them about reaching out to an advocacy group. Is that your advice when you feel like something like this may be part of your life?
I would hope they would. And I know many people are nervous to reach out to agencies, but I think once you get with an advocate, you realize, oh, this is a safe place to talk and make some plans and talk about my future and what I want it to look like, knowing that they can speak without judgment.
Well, Jody Strauss, Executive Director of SHARE, which does domestic violence agency serving Morgan, Washington, Yuma counties in Northeast Colorado. Thank you so much for your time today. Thank you so much for your candor. I sure appreciate it.
Thanks, Melissa. Thanks for having me.
I'm Melissa Moore, and it's Mile High Magazine. Thank you for spending this portion of your Sunday morning with us. We're glad you're here. And for more information about this organization or any of the other ones you hear us talking about, just go to your radio station's website. Go out, have a great Sunday, be blessed, and be kind to everyone. I'll see you back here next week.